Welcome to Rise Above the Ashes podcast, where we break down the art of failure and learn why multiple failures equals true success if you just don't give up. In this podcast, we go deep with our guests to find out how they overcome some of the greatest obstacles in their lives and what makes them tick as a human being. Learn here how you can turn your failures into true success. Hello, this is Brandon Thompson. Welcome to Rise Above the Ashes podcast, where we break down the art of failure and learn why multiple failures equals true success if you just don't give up. In this podcast, we go deep with our guests to find out how they overcome some of the greatest obstacles in their lives and what makes them tick as a human being. Learn here how you can turn multiple failures, your failures, into true success. Well, today's special guest, we have Brian Preston. Brian Preston of former Layman Luther, still going, but he's the one that brought it on the map, and I'll let him tell you that story. And we also have him as the new current founder and owner of Lance Enter, which we will be talking about as well. But welcome, Brian. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me, Brandon. Congratulations on the podcast, man. This is awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for coming all the way here to do a live podcast. I wanted to talk to you guys about Brian's past. Brian has an interesting childhood, which we're going to talk about as failures, but we want to tell you about who Brian is at the core. So I want you to talk to me about who you are at the core. I know that you're a dreamer, being in your life a little bit, having you in my life a little bit. You're a big picture thinker. You're a dreamer. And I wanted you to tell me about what that was like for you as a kid that brought you to where you're at now.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was really into astronauts. I know that sounds strange or weird. I remember lying on my trampoline as a kid, looking up at the stars and just having this dream of going to outer space one day. And I didn't really have a lot of friends, you know. I was just kind of a loner, you know, early in my childhood and kind of connected with space and just the unknown and dreaming about, man, what lies like beyond what I can see. Right. And also was really intrigued with building and creating. My grandfather, I was a craftsman, and he put woodworking tools in my hands at an early age. And so just learning how to build and construct and not only the dreaming part, but also like having a dream and then creating that dream. And so one of the first projects we ever did was we built a tree house in my backyard as a kid. My grandfather helped me, my dad helped me. And that was such an amazing thing. I remember just like doing the getting your hands dirty part and creating something from nothing.
So was it your grandfather or your father that taught you how to create something from nothing or both?
Yeah, it was really both. But my grandfather had a huge impact in my life. You know, he would let us use his tools, you know, his hand tools, his woodworking tools. My cousins and I, we'd go out in the backyard and take old lumber and just start building stuff.
Right. So was this the Layman Luther grandfather?
Or it
the
was.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Gotcha. So was it your dad's dad or
Mom.
Your mom's dad? Okay. So how did this carpentry, you learning how to do carpentry at a young age take you to the next level? Like you're going through school, you find the love of your life, April, which is, you know, by every means, like Jackie Kennedy, like full of grace. Like she's like the sweetest person you ever meet. I'm sure she's a ball of fire too. But you guys got married young, graduate high school, go do your thing and you become this founder of this large Atlanta furniture company that hires homeless people to bring them out of the woods, to give them hope again, and to give people a good product somewhere. Like here locally, you've sold in, was it the Battery?
Battery.
Ponce City Market, Serenby. You've sold to these big companies before you sold the company itself. How did you go from this dreamer that became a hands-on carpenter and built something out of nothing that you have accomplished that you could sell for almost $1 million?
Yeah, so it really started. You know, I think a lot of it really started in the woods. You know, with my grandfather putting tools in my hands, like that's where the journey started for me. Just falling in love. I was a kid that, you know, when I wasn't dreaming about going to outer space, I was outside doing stuff. I wasn't playing video games. I wasn't really inside. I was an outside kid. I love being outdoors. I love being in the woods. And so, you know, that's really where the whole journey started. In high school, I started working for my wife's uncle. He was also a carpenter. In the summers, I would help him. You know, I learned I was the guy that was the lumber guy, right? I was sorting the lumber, carrying the lumber. It was very labor intensive work. And then in college, I started working for a very high-end carpentry guy. And, you know, just had this vision about 2003 to start my own business. When I started my first business, it was a kind of a high-end carpentry business and later transitioned into building houses. And obviously, we all know what happened in 2008, 2009. So found myself basically losing everything. We filed bankruptcy. My wife and I, we were broke, almost homeless.
Was it chapter 7 or chapter 13?
Chapter 7.
Okay.
Yep, chapter 7. So lost everything, you know, and just really was felt hopeless. And you know, I think it was at that point in my life that I was like, look, I'm a good dude here, you know, and this happened to me. And I'm sure it's happened to a lot of other people. Yeah. And that's really where the idea of Lehman Luther started. In my darkest moments, my darkest times, because I just knew that there was other people like me that needed some hope.
Right.
So then we went through a process of rebuilding everything, rebuilding our life, and actually went on staff at a church for a while, helping them with marketing and creative efforts, and worked for free for 2 years, no salary.
That's working for a church.
Yes, exactly. And luckily, my wife was bringing in a salary, but I just kind of committed my life at that moment to you know, help other people. And I felt like church, working in a church was probably the best context to do that.
Yeah.
Was introduced to a homeless community not too far from where we're sitting right here in the studio. And several homeless guys living in a tent city. And fell in love with their story and their passion. Realized that they were all, a lot of them were carpenters and they had been affected by, you know, the economic downturn that I experienced. And you know, the Pinterest was kind of coming on the scene during those days. This was 2010, 2011.
Right.
My wife had all these like DIY pallet wood projects that she wanted done. And so I was building these projects in my garage. And I just had one of those aha moments. Like, man, what would it look like if we put some of these homeless guys to work? And yeah. I remember that vision so clear in my garage. And yeah, I just kept wrestling with the idea. How do we do it? How do we bring it to market? What are we even building? And we just kind of committed to do it in 2012. January 2nd, 2012 was the first day Lehman Luther quit my... I was actually getting paid at the church at the time.
Right.
So I quit my job there, transitioned into just picking up homeless guys and literally bringing them back to my garage.
What were you picking them up in?
Had an old Land Cruiser, actually. It was an 89 Toyota Land Cruiser. Picked them up. Yeah. Drove them all the way back to our house, to our garage, which isn't really that safe. I didn't know these guys, but knew that this was the vision that I needed to do.
So you say you picked up a bunch of homeless guys. You went through a kind of like a tent city, a little town inside the woods, not too far from the podcast studio here. What was your initial thoughts when you went into the woods and to the homeless camps that first time?
Yeah, early on, you know, we tried to meet basic needs for these guys, like. Mm-hmm. You know, they would say they needed food or firewood or clothing. And so, you know, we would try to meet those needs. And we did that for almost 2 years.
Yeah. Okay.
And it wasn't until after 2 years, I was frustrated. I was like, man, these guys are still living in the woods. And every time they need something, they're calling me up. You know, I kind of became like Santa Claus of these guys a little bit. So I was, I wanted to do something where they could help themselves. I felt like I was enabling them to continue to live that way. And I wanted to give them like a, kind of a hand up instead of a handout.
Right, right. So, yeah. So when you got to that realization that they were pretty much, you know, and I'm not saying that these guys are entitled, but they're living in off the land. They're not paying taxes anymore. And people are bringing stuff to them. And maybe there's a little bit of entitlement, but maybe it's a little bit of hopelessness as well. You're taking them by the hand, loving on them, engaging in their lives. And you have this lamppost, this light bulb go off in your head, and you're like, maybe we should put them to work. So what was that initial conversation like with your first person, the first person you approached? How did that go from A to Z?
That's a great question. So I never forget, I was in the woods one day. I loved going out and just hanging out with the guy, you know, hanging out with them, learning about their stories. And there was a guy named Mitch out there. He was been homeless off and on most of his life. He actually had a two-story tent, which is pretty amazing. He dug a basement. You realize that, man, if I sleep underground, it's much warmer and cooler, you know, depending on the season. So really smart guy. And I remember being out there one day and just kind of got up enough nerve to ask him, like, man, Mitch, what do you guys really need? Like, how can I really help you? Again, I felt like bringing them more stuff wasn't really helping. It was enabling them. And he looked up at me and said, Brian, we need jobs. And so that was the moment for me that I was like, okay, like, what would it look like if we tried to employ some of these guys? And again, I knew nothing about homelessness. I knew nothing about mental illness. I knew nothing about addiction. It was just like, all right, let's see if we can find some jobs for these guys. So that's really where the light bulb went off for me.
That's incredible. And that's an incredible story. So you started off with one guy named Mitch, and you go to your garage back at your place and start working wood, or what did you do?
Yeah, so I didn't even have enough money. I literally started this company with no money, nothing. I'd borrowed a little saw from my dad.
Right.
And, you know, just, it's like, okay, well, if we're going to do this, like, didn't even really have enough money to buy material. So what can we use that's free? At the time, you know, the pallet thing was kind of cool.
Yeah.
So pallets were everywhere, you know. So, hey, let's take these pallets, let's disassemble them, and let's build something cool out of them.
this is awesome. So you created a furniture company out of your garage. So you were creating pallet walls, little decorations. How did it go from that to like staging materials, essentially, to furniture?
It's a great question. So, you know, we started this business. I didn't have a ton of knowledge of the furniture business anyway, and obviously later learned that pallet wood material is not the best quality furniture material. So we just kept researching. We didn't give up. We didn't quit. You know, we learned so much even in that first year. And the most important thing we learned was how to scale our workforce.
Right.
Because we realized probably a year in that continuing to just go out to the woods and hire guys is not a scalable business.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So what we did is we actually evolved into partnering with transitional type homeless programs that work with these guys hands-on. When they graduate the program, like they really do the hard work. They help these guys with the mental illness, the addiction problems, you know, daddy issues, all those things. And then when they come out, you know, they need a job. So that's how we were able to really scale our workforce later down the road.
Oh, wow. Wow. So I'm going to bounce around in chronology. You've told me a little bit about how you built Lehman Luther. It was named after your grandfather and things like that. When I sent you a list of bullet points for you to give back to me, you said that you are the emotional one. So I want you to tell me about that. And while you were, I want to tie it back in, while you were building Lehman Luther, how did the emotional one play into effect of building a company that you were trying to scale?
Yeah, I think, I know Chick-fil-A, I've got some mentors that work at Chick-fil-A, and they have this three-legged stool process. And one of them is emotional connection. That's one of their pillars of their business. And right. You know, we really built Lehman Luther off that emotional connection. So we were telling a story early on, engaging people in. Hey, this is more than you just buying a pallet wood table. This is like you changing TC's life. When you make a purchase, you're being a part of changing his life. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, my wife and I joke, like if my wife's crying, like it's bad. Like, might happen once every couple of years. And I'm the one that's like crying at Lion King. You know, we saw it last week and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the best movie ever, you know? So I think it really comes from a place of, I don't know, empathy. Think it's like, it has a lot to do with like, man, it's just the emotional connection that I have. Like I can tell if I'm emotionally connected to something, then I'm going to give it 150%.
And you did just that with your company. So you took these guys out of the woods. You employed them. You gave them hope where there was no hope. You scaled a company. You were selling to large brands. Like who?
Well, the last big project we worked on was the new Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Yeah.
So we did over 200 tables for that project. Took two and a half years to complete. Wow. But yeah, we've done stuff for Williams-Sonoma, West Elm. We've done stuff with Restoration Hardware, but we really kind of went in a direction of working with large architect firms. So it was a great journey.
That's incredible. So you sold the company in the last 2 years or one year?
It's just over a year.
Okay, great. So that's incredible. So you scaled the company to start on a passion project that we're going to talk about here in a few. But I wanted to ask you, what was your greatest failures through the process of building this company from scratch and taking it to a company that was a huge success that you sold and you gave it to somebody that's wanting to expand your dream?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think, you know, about every 3 to 6 months, you know, as an entrepreneur, you go through these moments of like, I'm done. Like this is, it's hard enough to run a business, like a for-profit business. But when you're running a socially driven business like us, where we're trying to employ people, and then we're also trying to run a for-profit business, it's like, it's almost impossible.
Yeah.
So there's so many moments of like, man, I am just done with this. And then not only that, we're in an industry that's such a heavy capitalized business. You know, furniture is, it takes a lot of money to make a product.
Right.
You know, so it's not like, you know, we're making, you know, t-shirts. Like this is expensive stuff that we're working on here. And so, you know, there's just been a lot of things that we had to overcome, you know, even from cash flows perspective. And, you know, I know you guys were generous enough to help us several times, you know, with that. So, just trying to figure out how to be a great business owner, you know, like that's, right. That was the biggest challenge for us. And, again, we started it as, and this is how we can help some homeless guys, but I wanted to grow and scale because I wanted to help another guy and I wanted to help another guy. And in order to do that, we had to have, you know, we had to have equipment, we had to have structure, we had to have, you know, we had to have financing, all those things that go into growing a business.
So do you think you were, so you don't think you were prepared for that in a sense?
Not at all. Like we, you know, I'm like the guy that's, you know, that jumps in with both feet. It's like, we'll figure this out once we get it going, yeah. You know, but no, I wasn't prepared for any of that. And, you know, I've learned so much just about, just good solid business, yeah. in the journey. So it's been amazing.
That's incredible. So, well, you're the dreamer. The dreamer has been presented on stage at like a TEDx conference. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
I thought I remember that. What did you talk about there?
I actually talked about hope.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. We got to share so we launched the company in January 2nd, 2012. I got Huffington posted a story on us in early March. One thing that we did do, going back to that question of emotional connection, like I had a guy with a little camera follow us around for the first two months. And what he captured was these homeless guys moving out of the woods and moving into housing. And so he basically created a 7-minute documentary. And that 7 minutes is really what slingshot our growth early on. And so by March, we were on headline news. CNN did a story on us.
Right.
We got asked to do a TEDx talk and I just shared a message of hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have a standing ovation afterwards or do you remember?
I actually did. At the time, we were one of two standing ovations and I wasn't prepared. I was so nervous. Like I was so nervous. But I just shared my story and just shared their story. And I think people connected to it. Awesome.
Right, right. How many people were in that room when you were speaking?
There's probably 350.
Wow. Yeah. So what was it like for you to get up in front of 350 people and you had never done it before?
It was scary.
Yeah.
It was really scary. I mean, there's some brilliant people on the stage, you know, and I'm like, what am I doing here? You know, I'm just a redneck from West Georgia. But it was great, man. I think hopefully what they saw is just me being authentic and vulnerable. And me, like one normal dude, just trying to make a difference in the world.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think that's what they connected with.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, I had posted the other day when you're trying to help more people, that's when the money flows. Do you find that something that you agree with?
Yeah, I do. I think you're right on the money with that. No pun intended. But I think you know, it's so weird. Like the older I get, the more I just have a different interpretation of what it means to be rich, you know? Right. And for me, like obviously being financially stable and creating a legacy for my children is very important, but also being rich is helping other people, like helping other people. And I think that is so like connected to what you were saying in that post, man. Right. I love it.
Yeah. So what kind of legacy do you want to build for your daughters? You got two daughters. What's their ages?
Yeah. 11 and eight. Yeah. 11 and eight. So, you know, really more than anything, you know, I want them to know what it means to work hard and know that they can chase after big dreams too. But I also want them to be realistic. Like, you know, like I wanted to be an astronaut as a kid. That the odds of that happening were very, very slim. You know, like, right. like, you know, I would love to play in the NBA, but that's never going to happen. You know, so, so like having big dreams and chasing after dreams, but also being, you know, having, being realistic, you know, and being okay. Like failure is okay. It's okay. Right. You can learn from it and move past it. So yeah, I want to create a legacy for them just to know that they can go after and build whatever they want to do.
Right. Right. Yeah, you have sweet daughters. I can attest to that. Got to know them for a short period. Awesome wife. Describe to the people listening what it's like to live in a rural town in West Georgia, being the redneck as you so self-professed, and tell us what it's like building a business when there's not a lot of entrepreneurs around that are trying to be in harmony with you, and you have to kind of do it on your own.
That's a great question, man. I think, you know, most of I've learned this. There's great entrepreneurs everywhere. Yeah. There's great entrepreneurs in small rural West Georgia, but you know, we live in such a digital age. Like, I can connect and be influenced with people all over the world. And right. So, you know, I would say, like, the guys that are building great businesses in West Georgia, they're not on Facebook, you know, they're not on Instagram, but as you get to know them and get to know like what they're working on and what they're building, it's really phenomenal to learn that, you know, whereas we built businesses on social media and it's like the whole world can see it, you know, and see kind of what we're working on. So it is challenging, you know, but again, I got a friend he's built a $20 million virtual assistant company. He and his wife work out of his basement in Alpharetta, Georgia. They do $20 million a year. It's called Belay. Great company.
What is it called?
It's called Belay.
Belay.
It used to be called EA Assistant.
Okay.
But great. Brian and Shannon Miles.
Yeah.
You should have them on the show, man. But they can talk about virtual and scaling, but you can do things virtually these days. It's really amazing.
Yeah. So for me, living in the West Georgia area, not trying to bring this back to me, but living in the West Georgia area, I feel like there's a certain mindset that's kind of capped. Like, we're living under a ceiling and all I wanted to do was run. I wanted to go into Atlanta, get around the money. And then for some reason, some kind of serendipitous spirit, something moved me back to West Georgia, moving into Carrollton and things like that. All I ever wanted to do was run because I associated the area with non-dreamers and poverty. But now it's like it's changing. You got people like you surfacing, you know, people like me, and I'm starting to see more of that creative spirit coming out, and I can collaborate with people more. Do you feel that that was something that was holding you back as you were building the business, going back to Lehman Luther, and even your new business we'll talk about here in a few minutes? Was that something you feel like was holding you back, or is that something that you just didn't really think about?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really think about it. I guess I was just kind of in the zone. But you're right. Like, even coming up through my, you know, late teens, early 20s, you know, you kind of have this mindset of, I'm getting out of here. Like, I'm getting out of here mindset. And what's crazy is all my friends had that same mindset, yet guess where they live?
We're all right there.
We're all in Carrollton, you know, and there's something, it's home. Yeah. You know, it's like, it's where I grew up. It's what I know. And it's so cool to see friends become entrepreneurs or even friends that go into the workplace. There's some great large scale companies, Southwire being one. My parents both retired from there.
Right.
One entrepreneur created their private company. They'll do $6 billion this year.
Yeah.
So they're employing a lot of my friends that I graduated high school with. So that's pretty cool.
That's incredible. Yeah. I'm starting to see a lot of people coming from the graduating high school from the late 90s to the early 2000s. And they're starting to pop up and surface somewhere between, let's just say, 30 to 40 years old. And they're building really cool things on this side of town. Atlanta is slowly becoming like a small Silicon Valley of its own. They're bringing a lot of tech companies out here. We're doing a lot of different things like that. Do you feel like the Atlanta area in general, maybe even reaching into West Georgia, is about to change?
It's a great question. Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I know a lot of families like our age, you know, they want to be in the city. They want to be, they call it ITP, inside the perimeter, which is 285 goes all the way around, you know. But also what's happening with that is a lot of gentrification is happening. You know, there's these little small pocket neighborhoods that are gentrifying So, I think it is changing, but you're right. There's great tech, which, you know, the thing that I'm working on next is a tech. So I kind of understand the space. You know, you got Atlanta Tech Village, which is doing amazing things. ADAC, you know, there's a lot of great tech kind of accelerator programs going on in Atlanta.
Right. Well, I completely agree. Well, before we talk about Let's Enter, let's talk about Luke Bryan. You went to the Luke Bryan concert the other night. How was that?
It was fun, man. It was a lot of fun. So, never been to a Luke Bryan concert. Yeah. Even though he's played in Villarica twice, actually. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, really?
But yeah, he kind of did this rural tour. But yeah, so we like last minute bought lawn tickets. It's an amphitheater, so you can either have assigned seating or you can have lawn seats. So we bought lawn seats last minute. And so we just said, hey, let's go. We'll have a good time, you know, make a night of it. And then, you know, there's guys that are selling tickets on the side of the road when you pull in, right? Yeah. So I was just like, hey, let me see what kind of tickets this guy has. So I rolled my window down. Hey, man, like, what you got any good seats? Oh, yeah. These are like front row pit tickets.
Oh, wow.
It's like, what do you want for him? It's like, I'll take $400 for him. that's a little too much for me. I was like, I'll give you 200. He's like, nah, I can't do that. So we roll the window up, drive down the road. He's like chasing us. So, all right, I'll do it. So I buy the tickets from him, $200, you know, and even at that moment, I remember looking over at April and there was another couple with us. They're like, those are fake. Those are so fake. I was like, no, man, look at it. Like, they look so real. They look real. So anyway, we get parked, go into the front entrance. Give them the tickets. They start scanning them. Not found.
No.
Not found. So the guy took me for $200. So I'm just mad. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, I can't believe I did that. So anyway, they call like the supervisor over there. Apparently buying scalp tickets is a big deal. You know, not that I wasn't in trouble, but they were trying to find this guy that duped me for $200. Got to meet the manager of the whole facility. And I was mad. Yeah. I was really mad, but I was in the moment. I was like, I'm going to be kind and just try to like, just love on this lady. Cause you can tell she lives in hell, like her life, you know, everything she has to deal with.
Right.
So we just started chatting. I was like, look, it's my wife's birthday. I was trying to do something amazing. This guy duped me. She was like, well, there's nothing I can do. You're out of luck. You know, luckily we still had lawn tickets. So we were like, okay, we'll sit on lawn. So I'm walking away and she walks up to me. She's like, look, I got you. I'm going to take care of you. So she ends up giving us wristbands. So we got to, even though I got duped for $200, we actually got to experience the night front row. So it's just kind of a lesson learned, you know, like be kind.
Yeah.
When you want to, you know, like throw a fit, like just be kind and usually it'll pay off, you know, pan out.
Yeah. That's incredible, man. What an awesome story. You know, I agree. Like, I don't want to keep people under my wings. I don't want to hold them back. I don't want to talk down to them. I want to just love people and treat them the way I want to be treated. And I've learned through, as the years of doing business have come by, that the more kind you are to people, the more you engage with them, the more you talk to them, it's going to be better for you in the long run. And it's definitely a whole lot better for them, so they don't have to hear your crap. So, I mean, it's a win-win. So that is an incredible story. Was there any other lessons you learned from that, or anything that your friends that were with you had said? Or?
You know, they were. I could just see like disappointment in my wife's eyes. You know, I just lost this $200. You know, and then just like the excitement when, you know, it's like, hey, she's gonna let us be up there anyway. Yeah. So yeah, I think just learning, like, man, kindness always wins. Yeah. You know, I mean, you may not get front row seats to Luke Bryan if you're kind, but it usually pans out pretty well.
Right. So tell me about, actually, before we go into Let's Enter, let's talk about, you've done a couple of small TV shows and you almost collaborated on a TV show with me and my previous business partner. What were those shows? What were those mini documentaries? What was all that you've done in the past? Well, I know it was with Layman Luther and we've gone past that, but you've had a little bit of press behind you and you've been on HGTV and things like that. What was that experience like?
It was incredible. I mean, it was both incredible and humbling. So we were on HGTV DIY twice with a show called Tiny House Big Living.
Yeah.
I know we hadn't talked about tiny houses, but we started basically building tiny houses and doing online fundraisers for them and create a whole nother brand. And by doing so, we started getting these emails from producers like, hey, we want to feature some of your builds. Would you be open to it? So we actually got to do that twice about 2 years ago, 2017, awesome. Which is amazing. It's really an amazing journey. And you know what comes with that too is, you know, there's so many producers out there that are looking for meaningful stories. And so we've actually kind of been in talks with numerous kind of opportunities like that, even with what we were working on together,
right?
Which we should tell that story sometime. That's a crazy story, but nevertheless,
story for another day.
Yeah. Nevertheless, like it was a great experience, you know, but it's also, I think what comes with it too, is like we would have to shut our whole operation down in order to film, you know, just from noise. And so it was pretty expensive really for me, you know, but I think the payoff was worth it. So,
right. Well, what was the payoff? I think we're coming into the new venture now. But.
Yeah. I think the payoff is, you know, it gives you a lot of clout and credibility, and you know, people assume that if you've been on TV, you must maybe know what you're doing or know what you're talking about or whatever. So, it just gives you a lot of. I think it just gives you a lot of great experience.
Exactly. Well, so this TV show has, or the little bit of clout that you receive from these little TV shows or miniseries or episodes or whatever they were, has brought you to a point where you were buying and selling tiny homes. You're kind of like flipping them or whatnot. You're building them from ground up, and you were kind of you were auctioning them off. Is that the term? Or
it's actually an online sweepstakes.
Okay,
online fundraiser.
Okay.
Yep.
So how did you go about doing that?
Well, so we were a moment in our business where we were kind of hitting some we needed cash flow issues, to be honest with you. Right. And so we had one of our first employees, TC, he kind of went through a journey of working for us and falling off hard in his addiction, leaving, coming back. And I know that Brandon, you walked with us a lot in his story. Yeah. So he came back to us. He was gone for about 9 months. He was sleeping on the shop floor. Yeah. The company didn't really have enough money to get him a place to stay. And so we were like, hey, what can we do? To raise a little bit extra cash quickly. And it was just another one of those visions, those moments, that emotional connection. I was like, you know what, man, maybe we could do a raffle or something. And at the time, my friends at Brother Moto had just raffled off a motorcycle.
I love that place.
I know, it's awesome. And so they took a $3,000 motorcycle.
Right.
They were moving into a new space, did an online fundraiser and raised over $40,000. I called Jared up at Brother Motor. I was like, dude, what did you do? Like, that's magic. Like, yeah. So he kind of walked me through the process and I just started looking around like, hey, what could we do that could be big and meaningful? And I was like, I got it. Tiny house. You know, it was kind of, that was like early, you know, it was 4 years ago. And so people were.
That was during the tiny home craze.
Yeah. It was like, it was a big thing and they were getting a lot of press and people were into them. And so literally spent a day building a little Squarespace website. Yeah. And the next day we launched it. I didn't have enough money to build the tiny house. Okay. Right. And the first day we raised $30,000.
This
was one tiny house.
That's incredible. So this was, tying this in, this was before you sold Lehman Luther. Yeah. You started this side project to help someone out. And it eventually pivots to where you sell Lehman Luther, somebody comes in and sees the vision. I'm kind of breaking in. I'm kind of telling your story for you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no,
I'll let you correct me where I'm wrong. But then it leads to the ultimate next big thing, which is Let's Enter. Tell me about that pivot point. How do you go from Lehman Luther to the tiny homes to this? And you've told some of that. You've shared that already. But what was the thing that, you know, pulled it all together? What was the glue?
Yeah, I think after doing 8 tiny house fundraisers, I started getting a lot of inbound from people. They were like, hey, you know, can you show us what you're doing with that? Like, we have a nonprofit. We're trying to raise money for it. Can you show us like what you're doing? And I did that for 2 people. I showed them how to basically everything we did with our tiny house giveaway is what it's called, tiny house giveaway. I was showing them how we did it. And what I realized is, man, there were so many steps in the process and you had to take all the information and send it to a third party to pick the winner. Like, it was just very convoluted, very complicated.
Right.
And it was just another one of those aha moments. Like, man, we need to create our own software. So if Brandon wanted to do an online fundraiser for his favorite nonprofit, he could use our platform, our software to do that. And obviously we would take a small percentage. That's our business model. So that's kind of how it all evolved.
Okay. So let me stop you right there. So wait a minute. So you said that if Brandon wanted to do this, you know, I could be anywhere. So somebody, my buddy Chris out in California, he could put something up there and sell this on Let's Enter and help a cause.
That's right.
Okay. So you see that this is starting to change. You've done 8 tiny homes. You're building this new venture up. What was the turning point where you're looking, where you're looking at like Layman Luther, like, it's time for me to move on past this. I've done a lot here. I've helped a lot of people, but this is no longer my dream. So I go from here to the next thing. And now this is my dream.
It's a great question. I think I love to start things. Yeah. I'm a dreamer. I love to create things from nothing. Right. And Layman Luther had kind of got to a position where, you know, was finally making a little bit of money, yeah. had a great team in place. And the way that came about is a guy wrote me, he was wanting to create something similar. He was in Atlanta and we were having coffee and I was just joking with him. I said, hey, I'll just sell you this thing. You know, I was kind of joking. I kind of wasn't joking. And you know, you just feel things in your spirit where you're like, man, I'm ready to work on the next thing.
Yeah.
And that's where I was at. And so 6 weeks after we had that coffee, he was a new owner of Layman Luther. He's an amazing guy. His name's Gordon Cortez. Yeah. I think my former employees like him way better than they like me. I think he pays them a lot better than right. I was able to pay him. But fantastic guy. The company is still doing great things. They're growing. And he, you know, what really gave me peace about it is I know that he can take it much further than I ever could.
Right.
And letting go of something like that and being at peace is not only like challenging, but it's also, you know, it's very rewarding to know right. that, man, somebody will pay you for a vision that you had. It's pretty cool.
Right.
So, yeah. And I just knew that I was done with it. And I was just kind of like looking at the landscape of, man, what do I want to focus on next. And I knew it was technology because I love it. I think it's an easy, scalable business to be in, you know? And so, yeah, that was part of the reason why we chose to build this platform out.
Okay. So you sell Layman Luther. Now you're focusing on Let's Enter. So what were the first products that you put on Let's Enter when you started it?
Yeah. So obviously we had a huge tiny house following. Yeah. So we put a tiny house on there. One of my friends was a firefighter and he was trying to raise money to build a mobile training facility. So he actually had a Hummer, H1 Hummer. Yeah. He put that on the platform.
Shout out to Cody Mayfield.
Cody Mayfield. Yep. He's an awesome dude.
Yep.
And then I put my personal golf cart on there. So I'd, you know, spent enough money to create the MVP, you know, minimum viable product just to see, does it work? And obviously we learned a lot in that first year. So we launched it last June, actually. And, you know, we raised over $400,000 with those three items, which is amazing. And so...
What period of time?
It was about a four-month period of time.
Wow. So you go from zero to $400,000 raised in 4 months.
Yeah. And so we take a percentage. So we make 20%. Yeah. So that's how we scale the business. But nonprofits love it because... You know, there's only so many art galas. There's only so many golf tournaments. I know, Brandon, you probably get hit up every golf, you know, nonprofit golf tournament in town. They're wanting us to put a team in. So it takes a lot of work and there's not a huge payoff. But with this platform, it's taking a big ticket item like a tiny house or maybe it's a vintage car or something like that. And then people can actually pay to enter into win those items.
Right.
And in return, you know, it gives you a chance. I would never, you know, spend $200,000 on a car. Right. But I would spend $20 for a chance to win it, knowing that that money was going to charity.
Yeah, that's incredible. So, what's some of the next things that you're going to be releasing? Let's just say end of September, early October, 2019.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm really big into digital content. Yeah. You know, and so I actually created an online course on how to build a social enterprise, which a social enterprise is a business that does good in the world.
Okay.
So we should be ready to release that hopefully by the time this podcast release. So it's called Social Entrepreneurship Blueprint, SEP for short. So it's really about everything that we did with Layman Luther, how we started it from nothing, how we tried to make an impact in people's lives and how we later sold it.
Okay. Okay. So you got Let's Enter, you got your social blueprint. We'll add these into the show notes. That's incredible. So You got an intriguing story, Brian. I greatly appreciate you for telling me all this and giving me all the details here. Let's just go through a series of rapid fire questions, if you don't mind, unless you have anything else you want to add to the story that maybe I missed.
This is great. Dude, you're really good at this, by the way. You're a great host.
I try. Let's just start with this. What's your favorite book? What's the best book you've ever read and that you've reread and reread over and over and over again?
It probably is Start With Why, Simon Sinek. Huge Simon Sinek fan. I mean, I know I have to be reminded a lot of, you know, why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I also realize in the entrepreneur side is people buy why you do things, not what you do. You know, what is the reason why? So that's probably my favorite book. Obviously, Blake Mikowski, you know, I love, you know, Start Something That Matters. He's a cool dude. So
Incredible. All right. What's your favorite movie and why?
Oh, man. Favorite movie.
Or documentary.
I guess lately, because it's the first thing that comes to mind, is Free Solo. I know it's a, I mean, I've watched it like four times. And it's just the idea of like, man, you know, like, because I'm the guy that tries to like climb the mountain, but just the strategic planning that went into that, like, and the failure and him triumphing so much and then climbing a mountain without a rope, you know, is just phenomenal. So I think that's, you know, that's the first thing that comes to mind. It's my favorite movie right now.
Right, right. What's the best advice you would give to your 20-year-old self? Coming from the life you've lived 20 years or 17. How old are you, by the way?
I'm 37.
37, 17 years later. What would you tell your 20-year-old self?
I would tell my 20-year-old self to be more strategic before taking big risks.
Okay.
Again, my early 20s was, I'm the guy that's jumping in both feet.
Right.
You know, and just not having any kind of plan. So I'm a little bit more of a planner these days.
Yeah.
So.
Good. Well, you learned a lot, obviously, over the last 17 years, all the trials and tribulations you've gone through and what you've done to and accomplished. Where do you see yourself in the next 10 years?
Yeah. In the next 10 years, I really want to make an impact. I really want to help, you know, 9 out of 10 nonprofits fail. And so creating Let's Enter is really a trying to solve that problem. Like there's so many great people doing great work and they fail because of lack of funding. And so we feel like we have a great product that helps nonprofits with funding. So I want to see these, you know, these great nonprofits achieve their goals and visions.
Right, right. Well, we've got two more questions. If I were to talk to your friends and ask them what your superpowers are, what would they answer?
I don't know. I think probably just understanding how to emotionally connect a story to a product is probably the thing I'm the best at. So in other words, you know, like with Layman Luther, you know, we said we'd build tables, you know, and we believe the world's changed around tables. And not only when somebody buys a table, like they're changing somebody's life.
Right.
They're changing a homeless person's life. So it's just like the emotional connection and being a very intentional storyteller, I think.
Okay. So this podcast is about how to take multiple failures and how it basically talks about the tips, the tricks, the habits that people have taken and accomplished so that they can pick themselves back up after they fall down. And they go and accomplish something extraordinary. Basically, the extraordinary comes out of the ordinary. What is the biggest failure you feel like you've ever had that you have constantly struggled with and that you have finally overcome?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with financial failure.
Yeah.
You know, I think having gone through a bankruptcy, losing everything, just seeing the defeat, you know, in your wife's eyes. I know you've been there too. It's one of the hardest things that I've ever gone through, and I'm so cautious today, to never make those same choices that I made back in those days. So I think that's probably the biggest failure.
Right, right. Well, let me ask you this, Brian. Where can people find you?
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter. I'm so long time social media, at Brian Preston on Twitter, at Brian Preston on Instagram.
Okay.
And those are my two favorite platforms, obviously on LinkedIn. Everything else, I'm on there too, but at Brian Preston. And that's Brian with an I.
And what's your website's name?
Yeah, it's letsenter.com is the fundraising platform.
Okay.
And brianpreston.co is my personal website.
All right. Well, there you have it, guys. Thank you so much, Brian, for being here. I greatly appreciate you taking the time out of your day to do this with me. Any last questions you have for the audience or any ask or anything for me you want to ask?
Oh, man. I'm so excited for you. You did a great job, man. And Brandon's built some great business too. So this is just another amazing layer to what the work that you're doing. So I'm happy for you, man.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Well, there you have it, guys. Follow Brian. Thank you so much. See you next time. Thank you for listening to Rise Above the Ashes, the podcast. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at our website at riseabovetheashes.com.